Hello and welcome back to the Sunday podcast brought to you guys by sportshoes.com. As always, we are back for another radio roundup, national cross country review on the way. We'll talk about Keely's world record as well. Megan Keefe, probably the British record that went under the radar a bit with all the news going on over the weekend. And then Masiala as well. Should we be allowing these celebrations or was it right to DQ him? We'll get into all of that. But mate, how are you first of all? How did you enjoy the national? You were there as a coach, a spectator. Enjoying yourself?
Fantastic weekend as always. Well worth the drive up. Drove up and down on the same day, and I know it's not much of an achievement to be fair, but was a terrific day.
Race, mate.
It's moments like that when you're watching it. A little bit of you wishes you were racing, but then you know the other half reminds yourself how bloody hard it is. And I think credit to the organisers. I thought the course was terrific. You know, it was a really hard testing course. And you know what? It's one of the deepest nationals I think I've probably seen in a few years, just from top, you know, down into that sort of mid-pack as well. And then just the little touches that Flycarb made with that 1K sprint, I thought that was brilliant. And it actually gave us a little bit of context on how fast these races were opening. I mean, the men's race, 240, Milner took the sprint, 244 first kilometer. For, you know, bearing in mind, it's a 12 and a bit K race. And it was four or five of them through that first K running 2:45. Absolutely electric. And then, you know, the rest of the field were through in 3 minutes for that opening kilometer.
Yeah, mate, I think that's a great point because I think the national does get a bit of a rev, right? Hasn't it? As like the long, slow, traditional cross country that none of the fast boys do and that they only do Liverpool. But yeah, it's certainly not the case, is it?
No, you needed an absolute engine to feature. Same on the women's side. I think their opening K was 3:20, something in the region of that. But I'll read you this by Callum Johnson because I obviously stumbled across this on the weekend and thought this. He summed it up, you know, perfectly, right? And so I hope I can do this post justice from Johnson. But what's he said? Fourth in the English cross country national. There's just something about this race. It's truly one of the best domestic races in the UK. It's the epitome of club athletics. And for me personally, and probably many others, it's an event that holds so much in terms of why we do this sport. For the majority of us, it's our humble beginnings, our first taste of national competition and our inspiration to be better runners. I hope the young runners of today see the importance of events like this in a changing landscape where fast times and fast road races are looked at as more appealing. There's nothing quite like the National Cross Country Championships to showcase head-to-head racing and practice skills needed to win races. There is more to be said about the benefits of racing, the people around you, and switching off from chasing the clock. He then goes on to talk about his efforts and obviously he's pleased with his fourth, would have liked third, but I thought he sums it up perfectly. You know, we are in an era of fast times. Yeah, we've got one of the biggest road races in the country in a few days' time on Friday. But yeah, when you're up there and you see it play out, those head-to-heads and just the way everyone is battling every step of the way, it's what makes the national so special. And I thought it was showcased brilliantly this weekend. But yeah, shall we get into a few races? Or shall we get Hookway? We have got Hookway on the line, actually. Shall we get him in?
We have, yeah. Mark Hookway is on the line, so a very special phone in today. Let's get him straight on because he's obviously been on the podcast a couple of times before.
Hey, Mark.
Hi, guys.
How's it going, mate? You okay?
Yeah, a bit shattered, but I'm okay. Thanks. Yeah. Yeah, we had a big weekend.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, we were just chatting about Callum Johnson talking about the national and just talking about how it's such a nice change in the calendar. In contrast with everything we're getting these days about fast times and I guess all the new stuff, which is great as well. It's great to have new stuff, but it's nice to be able to go back to a bit of traditional British cross country running, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, you probably know for 20 odd years, I've been closely associated with the national in terms of getting Tunbridge teams there. It's also, I was just thinking actually, I don't think there's another event like it where you get all the age groups there at one championship, competing and being together and supporting each other. So it is pretty special from that aspect, I think.
Absolutely. Mark, what did you make of the competition and the races?
Well, the races were brilliant, head-to-head. It's just raw head-to-head competition. The women's race, there was four contesting quite late on, wasn't there? And the men's race was incredible, the speed they started at. I think Callum himself, I saw him after the race, I walked back with him and he said, Mark, I just can't start that quick these days. He's over 30 and he just Yeah, I think James Kingston, who doesn't wear a watch when he's racing, said they went through 5K. Somebody else had got a watch on, said it was 14:30, first 5K, and not one bit of ground was smooth running. So, yeah, that is very impressive. They just don't get the credit compared to a Valencia 10K or something like that. It's just sad because there's people who run 28, I think. Flynn Jennings made a note. Where was he? 28th to in the national, something like that.
Yeah,
it's completely different.
You're spot on, Mark. I could talk for Slade. I think Slade was 30-10 at 10K, and he was dropped off from Milner and Kingston at that point. So they must have been 29, looking at that finishing gap, 29-something, or 29-30-something even at 10 kilometres over a very hilly and testing course.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I don't know. The numbers were down. That would be one of the big headlines. It always is when it's up north. It's...
yeah, but the quality wasn't.
No, the quality wasn't. And the organisation was brilliant and the atmosphere was brilliant. And so, yeah, fair play to everyone who puts it on. It's not easy, is it? It's hard. And that puts quite a few people off, doesn't it? One way or another. Whether it's racing or whether it's organising club teams to go. I mean, poor old Shaftesbury guy I saw. They were second in the senior men's last year. They didn't have one runner this year. And I don't think they had any females across the age groups, he said. And it was, you get that from some clubs, unless you've got somebody galvanising it and getting the support of your club mates and others in the club, it can just so easily fall apart because it's a tough assignment to get people there.
Well, Mark, I wonder if you can inspire a few to take up your role at their various clubs. Talk about the operation that you go through to make sure Tonbridge get to the national and win the national. Your senior men taking that title, congratulations to them and you yourself.
Yeah, well, yeah, perhaps I thought we'd never win it again. It was 6 years ago we last won it. It starts with, as soon as I know where the venue is for next year, I'll be on it, trying to find out the best hotel to stay at that's within the vicinity. Can handle the sheer number of twin rooms. It wasn't until we took a photograph of all the Tunbridge people afterwards, I realised what a mammoth operation it was. We had 109 starters and finishers. I mean, that takes some doing. And there was six or seven youngsters that finished right near the back of their races. And that, it's bewildering in this day and age. People want immediate sort of kudos, don't they? But just to get round and finish a really tough. It's not like doing a part run or even a half marathon. It requires a different mentality, I think. And a lot of organisation goes into it. I mean, I must admit, putting on a dinner with awards and a disco on Saturday night and staying close by does attract quite a few of them rather than actually doing the cross country. But it's all.
Yeah, I think, Mark, that's exactly it. Because I remember the last time you guys won it, or maybe you won it since then. But man, I obviously went to university with Charlie Jocelyn Allen. And I remember him always speaking to us about how every year you'd put on this kind of spread, if you like, for the national. And it would be traveling up as a team. Everyone's staying in a hotel. There's always awards. There's a party afterwards, regardless. And I think it's something that a lot of other athletes won't experience until they maybe go to university and go to a Bucks Cross. But as an under 13 at Tunbridge, you're getting that team cross country experience from 11 years old. And I think it is that. And even if that's the reason people go, I think that's a brilliant reason to want to go to a national cross.
It is. And I had an email this morning from one of the dads who came up with his daughter and son. His son was in the under 13s. His daughter was in the under 15s. Neither of them were anywhere near the front, and they travelled all the way up there to compete. And he said what an impact it made, especially on the son. We tend to forget. He was on the dance floor with about 50 people, and James Kingston was there encouraging him and stuff like that, the under 13. And you think that is, you just don't get that. And James Kingston's his hero, really, at the club. And I even forget that. I used to look up to the Brendan Fosters or whoever it was, or Steve Ovetz. And they're the equivalent within their own club, I guess. And it's the only chance they really do have to get together, be it sitting on a bus or at a dinner or something. Yeah.
Yeah. Mark, just on some of the individual performances, obviously you've got Kingston and Ted Higgins in the top five there, which how different, right, are these two athletes? And then how different is a preparation to get obviously Kingston's kind of put a minute on him, but a fairly similar performance, right? A national cross. And how does that work?
It was staggering. I should have written down what you said last week, Ollie, on the podcast about doing the indoor 3000 and the cross country. Yeah, we've done it once before. They are totally different athletes. I mean, Ted, they're both talented in different ways. Ted has clearly got physical and mental talents just in pure capability. James's talent is grinding out those 100 miles a week without missing a beat. And that, not many people have. You look at his Strava, it's like a straight line at 100 miles a week. And it's, I felt he was, he actually said that was his best ever race on Saturday, even though he's won it before. I mean, I really don't know what shape Hugo Milner's on for a track 10K or road 10K, but he is in phenomenal shape, I think. Ted, I really don't know where the limit is. He just keeps surprising me. We spoke a couple of weeks ago and he said, where do you reckon I should finish? 50th or something? And we all laughed a bit and said, maybe top 20.
Yeah.
And then I saw him Sunday morning. I said, how are you? And he said, I feel fine. This is bonkers. He's going to Glasgow on Sunday to back to 1500 to help his brother in the 1500.
Wow. Mm. Well, just quickly to Mark, I've got to ask how that race is setting up in Glasgow. I've heard a few things of this meet in Glasgow. So obviously Jack's going to do it. Is there anyone else on the start list? Is there any other events taking place?
There are. I don't know too much about it other than the 1500. Where it's being set up to try and get at least nudge them forward towards the qualifying time. Because Jack was on the list within the top 30 that I believe they could select from, because you can have 30 go to the world indoors in total. So if you're within the 30th person, bearing in mind it's only two per country, you can be selected, I believe. But he slipped this weekend, he slipped outside of that. So he has to nudge his time forward.
Ugh.
As does James McMurray. He's down for it. Adam Fogg, I believe, is called his season. He was showing interest in the race. But I don't know what Henry Jonas is doing. He's the other one. But he'd like, I mean, they're going to give it a go. The difficulty is, as I've seen in so many races, you go through in 155, 156 at 800. Who can actually pace that and actually stick to it? It so often happens they highlight that and it goes through 159 and you've got no chance. So they've got to really stay on it to have any chance. And I think I looked up the track record. I think it was Geordie Beamish when he won the world indoors and that was outside 336. So they got a bit of work to do. But what do? You've got to give it a shot, haven't you?
Special. Mark, I just checking our messages. I said Ted Higgins would come top 15, I imagine comfortably, were my words.
Who said that? You
I said that to you. Yeah, I said that to you last week. You said, oh, maybe. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
it's surprisingly, when you look at the results, you can see the difference between a really muddy Parliament Hill, can't you, and the course we got on Saturday. It's different challenge. And I think that's nice because each year different people can get to shine. Whereas I think Parliament Hill last year might not have favoured Ted, to be honest.
Yeah, let's chat a bit about that that senior women's race as well, because as opposed to the men's, where they've put some serious time into, like, the top two have run away, we've got some athletes here that are battling. I think you mentioned at the start, Mark, like four of them away together, like Lucy Jones taking the win, Amelia Quirk in second, Molly Smith in third, Jake Smith's sister.
Yeah.
Jess Gibbon in fourth and Lee Brown in fifth, all pretty close to each other. And then it keeps going. Like it looks almost like a NCAA race if you look at the results in terms of the timings and how close everyone is.
Yeah, but I think the highlight for me watching that was the reaction of the Herne Hill girls at the presentation. Again, it just brought home the team spirit, really. I mean, I was talking to Jeff Gerwood, their team manager and coach to some of them, and I didn't realise they'd never been on the podium. You know, that...
Wow.
It's just something, there's something special about being part of a team in an environment like that. And as you mentioned, Charlie Jocelyn Allen, previously with us, we had to wait for ages for him to come in as our sixth scorer the first time we won it. And every one of those girls, you know, those four for Herne Hill, will remember that for the rest of their lives, I should think. You know?
Yeah. No, I think you're bang on. Is that something that do you tee that up? Like pre-race, is that something that you chat to them about in terms of like where they might need to finish, or is it just something that's on their radar kind of naturally?
No, a little bit. I mean, two of our lads were first year seniors and finished 30th and third incredible runs, really, because they didn't go so well at Bucks for a couple of reasons. But Jamie McDonald was 30th, and he's a steeplechaser, and so he'd be looking to run sub nine in the summer. But he said to me, "Oh, maybe top 100 would be good." I said, "Look, Jamie, this is not a Parliament Hill National. Field size will be smaller.
Yeah.
You've got a chance of finishing top 50. I didn't expect 30th or whatever. So, yeah, you have to just get them to be realistic about where they can, what they can achieve. I mean, when it's six to score, we would have won if our seventh guy come in sixth, but beyond that, we wouldn't have won. And so you very rarely get six all running well on the day. Bristol absolutely swamped it last year. I thought we would be out of it this year, but somehow they pulled it around. So you do have to talk to them a bit about the possibilities, but I just can't believe the mental sort of anguish they must all be going through from every club contending for the team title, because you just got Will Battersall for Bristol must have put his heart and soul into that just to finish 11th in the end. There's nothing quite so mentally challenging as having to do it for a team as well as yourself, you know.
No. Battersall's race looked hard.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, Bristol packed really well in the sort of 40 to 50s. They had a flood of men, didn't they?
Well, this is the first year ever they had the team scores coming up after each lap. And I think the live stream, so many people said it's the best they've seen. It was like the NCAA process. I was on the course and I just relied on somebody bringing me a bit of paper to tell me where we were. And we were 60 points down after the first lap. And then 1 point ahead after the second lap, which made it pretty exciting, you know.
You shout that onto the course for them, or just let them roll with it.
I was showing we need every point at the end. That was about it.
Okay, yeah, there you go. Matt, we haven't spoken much about Slady Boy. How was he afterwards? I mean, obviously after winning last year, it's quite tough to beat that, but I think I guess from the outside looking in anyway, I think that's a nice way to, I guess, top it up or consolidate last year's win.
Yeah, certainly. I think he must have had, obviously him and Kingston both raced Milner at that London Cross Challenge, and Mark, I don't know if you agree, but the sort of lesson learned from that was don't let him get away, and just see if you could go with this man for as long as possible. He loves to go out hard, and that's exactly what Slade did. And I think if I'd have said to him before that race, you're going to run 2:45 for the first K, you're going to run 14:30 something for the first 5K over that hilly grounds, he would have been like, what? Like, is that what it's going to take? And so, yeah, he, you know, in the end, he just didn't have the legs. And I think it was a battle of the engines up front. And, you know, I think Kingston and Milner just have extreme engines right now. And yeah, he obviously needs a little bit more work there, but very proud of the way he actually battled in third, because a lot could have gone wrong once he dropped off after about 4.5K. He was completely on his own for the remaining 8K. And I think I saw the flycarb analysis. There were six men in the senior men's race who had the same position at a K as they did at the end of the race. One of those was Hugo Milner, and I'm pretty sure one of them was Slade as well. He was third through the K at the start and stayed third the whole race. So kind of shows you the mental toll that he had to go through to hang on to that position. And Callum Johnson, completely different race, was kind of hunting him down the whole way. And it was an open course, a windy course as well. So no, I was very pleased with his efforts. And I think give it a few more days and he will be too.
Yeah.
Was that your assessment as well, Mark? When you're sort of talking to Kingston pre-race, you're going, you're just going to have to go with him.
Yeah, it was. I didn't have to say too much. Hugo showed his cards at Parliament Hill. So impressive. In fact, it was quite deflating at Parliament Hill because he just ran away from them from the first 400 metres and they never got a sniff. Yeah, I thought, well, both Richard and James were in great shape. And it was just, they had to go with it. It's the only way of finding out what they were made of, really, and what they're capable of. And so James was just, I'm going to go with it and see what happens. And it, like you say, Matt, it could have become very messy, but luckily it was okay, because I'm just fascinated to know what Hugo can do.
I hope we see him. I hope we see him do a race that we can relate to. I mean, I'm sure he's got some triathlons lined up. I've heard he has, but I hope we see him do a 10K or something, or a half marathon or something where we can see out what sort of shape he's in. But
he's got to be close to 27 minute shape for 10K. Surely, he just looks phenomenal.
He looks so strong, doesn't he? He just looks so like just like for someone battling over 12K, he just looks so powerful. And I think that must be some of the triathlon stuff coming in. And he always has, to be fair. He's always been like looked pretty robust, but he's just looking even more so this year.
Talking to triathlon, Alex Yee was in the crowd supporting, just almost anonymous. And it's brilliant to see him there. A real fan of the sport, you know.
Yeah. Oh, I didn't see it. I didn't see him there, but that's good to hear. He was up there. I know his girlfriend was running, wasn't she? So,
oh, was she?
Good to, good to. Well, we'd love to see Alex Yee battle it back at a national again.
Yeah, brilliant.
So, right, Mark, thanks for coming on, mate. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Yeah, lovely, Greg. Well done with the show. Really enjoy it.
Cheers, Mark. Catch you soon.
Bye.
There you have it. Mark Hookway of Tunbridge. Always great to chat to Mark. Mate, let's just tidy up a few of those results so that we get through them. I think, obviously, Milner took the win, Kingston second, Slade third, Callum Johnson fourth, Ted Higgins fifth. And we've been through the women's ones as well. But yeah, mate, great national all around, wasn't it? And I think, the two worthy winners in Lucy Jones and Hugo Milner.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And both coming good at the right time. I've also got to shout out the under 20 races, junior races. They were, just as good as battles in both of those. And I think for those, firstly, the junior men testing over 10K, not often they race over that distance as a junior. And there was a great battle between Pickering and Kabede. And they went toe to toe, big sprint finish on that side. And then I'll shout out Rebecca as well, who won the junior women's race and was almost possessed on the course on Saturday, the way she sort of pulled away and took it to those girls. So as a coach, very, very proud of her. So well done, Rebecca. And should we move on to the world record?
Yeah, we got to chat about Keeley, haven't we? And I think it set up the weekend nicely, right? It's a Thursday night. You got a world record coming in. And look, to be honest with you, mate, like I think we knew she was going to be there or thereabouts, but now it's like, how quick can she go? Like 154 indoors is phenomenal, right?
Mate, I mean, I think you're looking at someone who's going to go 152 outdoors, to be honest. You know, just talk of 153s. I think she's going to blitz it outdoors. I mean, she just, I guess the thing is, if she gets injured, right? And if her sort of preparations for the summer are hampered, but where she is now, she's probably got quicker in her legs. I mean, that 26 high was very aggressive early on. And
second 100 was quicker as well.
It was.
I think that's why she just went out too quick. It was, she went through 100 like sharp and then picked it up again. I was like,
I wonder if that's down to the bank. Indoors, obviously they stay in lanes for longer now. I wonder if she just gets a bit off that bank, and that's why the second 100's a little sharper.
Well, she mentioned at British Champs after the race that one of the purposes was she wanted to experience the new start in a race. So that when she went for the record, she knew how that was going
to
feel.
Yeah, well, I think as well, whenever you announce you're going for a world record, you have to be aware of other people who are like going to be very excited and G'd up, and Audrey Rivera was one of them, right? She got out hard. I thought she was going to try and push Keeley back at 200. I thought she was going to spoil the party here. But Keeley managed to just come off that bank, work her way into what was the lead in behind the pacer. And do you know what surprised me most about Keeley is you've got a world-class athlete, has been obviously the top of her game for the last few years. But actually, you know, credit to Trevor and Jenny here. Her form's improved. You look at videos of her, or you know, races of her running 3 years ago compared to now. The mechanics are still changing. She's still improving on that. And you know, you've got an athlete 3 or 4 years ago who is near perfect, silver medalist in Olympics, silver medalist in world champs, you know, fastest in the world pretty much every year. But you know, now to that, those improvements you can actually physically see from where she was to running a world record,
and I think that's
impressive.
That was the biggest change. I think we spoke about this in the summer when she came out after the injury, was that you could see that they'd been working on weaknesses. You could see they've been working in the gym. She mentions in the interviews like that's she got stronger in the gym. She's been working on mechanics, working on power during that time off. And I think it's actually benefited her. Like you say, like the chance to spend, I guess, most of last summer rehabbing and making sure everything is right, so they reduce injury risk and also kind of build off the injury she did have. It's coming good now, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And it must be so difficult when you have an athlete of that class and that caliber, you know, to continue to improve them. And I guess, you know, kids, they always say, right, consistency wins, which is a very trusted saying. And yeah, you can really see it. And perhaps that time off, like you said, did do her wonders to improve. But yeah, I want her to go and break their world record outdoors. I mean, I think everyone does snatch it from, you know, that shaded person who currently owns it.
Yeah.
You know, it's about time. You know, it really is. So, yeah, and she's shaping up for it. And I think the only thing that gets in her way is injury. And you look at Keely's career now, and you almost probably say this is her, for me, this is probably her prime year. I think what she does this year and next will be the best years of her life. And then it'll be a case of defending her Olympic title.
I think that's it. And that's the thing. Yeah. If you tick them off this year, you tick off the records this year, you then don't have to worry about them at all when the majors come back. And that is the best thing for her. I think that if you end up trying to chase those times in years where you've got championships, you just risk not defending your titles, which are more important. But yeah, if she can nail the indoor and outdoor this year and then come out next year and smash the champs, then yeah.
I'll be honest though, like Ogie Vero is a serious athlete, and you know, she's a couple years younger than Keely. In 2028, I think they're going to have a fascinating matchup, because the way Vera is also improving. Unfortunately, she's just racing an athlete who is in their prime right now.
Mm. But Keely does need that. She needs the next thing to come through, and because I think that's what's helped her. Because she could have, I think Mo's a bit of a phenom, like obviously previously, and I think if Keely had won that Olympics in 21, it then. It doesn't always help, and I don't think she'd be running as well now if she had won that championships back in 2021.
Yeah, agreed with that. Yeah. Agreed with that, mate. From from one record to another, Megan Keith, European record, British record, 30.07 for 10K snatches. Ailish McColgan's record off her. McColgan was in the race. She was the one who was supposed to break that record. She was there to defend it. Unfortunately, Megan Keith puts, I think McColgan ran 30-30.
30-25, I believe.
30-25, was it? Sorry. Yeah.
I think that's the best thing about this record for Keith, is that you're not coming out of this and no one's saying, oh yeah, but if Ailish was in the race, she'd have run quicker.
Yeah.
Because she's not just nabbed the record, like you said. She's put 20 odd seconds, 18 seconds on Ailish in the race. And yeah. Great run, isn't it? It's weird, isn't it? I think because we think about, I know Ailish has run the records like more recently, but we think about that year where she was really flying, and I don't think we put Keith in that same caliber.
Man. Yeah. Look, Megan Keith is 23 years of age and she's running 30 O's for 10K on the road. It is absolutely phenomenal. I mean, this, if she goes and runs 29 something on the track, I mean, what? She's starting to put herself. You know, I think Battocletti is probably the level above, but she is starting to, if she continues to improve, they're going to have a good race at the European Championships, honestly. And I hope Keith does the 10K on the track. The way she's moving, I mean, I would love to see her battle for these 10Ks on the track. And, you know, her 5K is in a good place, and that's getting better as well. For me, the 3000 that she ran last summer was very strong. I think she ran 8:30 something for 3K. Like, if she can start to just, you know, improve on that top end, she's going to be able to challenge at championships, because 9 times out of 10, they're quite quick races as well. You know, they're fast from the get-go. And yeah, I would love to see her, you know, at the Euros. Take it to, you know, like we saw McColgan do, I guess, a few years ago at the commies and Euros, and take it to those women. But yeah, very interesting to see her next steps. But to be just 23 years of age and doing what she's doing, and had a year where you sort of, you know, she had a rough injury at the back of at the back of 2024, but yeah, ridiculous.
Yeah, we kind of like, is she even gonna come out and try and make the champs last year, weren't we? And then yeah, I think you're bang on. I think it's a perfect year for her. I think it's a perfect year that it lines up similar to Keely, in a way that Keith can now go and chase medals because we've got European circuit, rather than having to go in and worry about those, I guess, world fields. If she can go and chase a medal this year, if she can go toe-to-toe with Battaglietti over the 10,000 in the summer, then going into the year after, you're like, okay, can I go and transfer this to the world stage? And I think it's similar to what we mentioned with Nuttall. It's so nice to see that on the women's side, we've got an athlete in Nuttall over 5,000. We've got an athlete in Keith over 10,000. And we're like, these girls are really going to go and try and challenge on a major circuit. And yeah, I just hope on the men's side, we get something similar.
Well, yeah, at the moment, it's certainly these British women who are just taking Europe, taking the world by storm. They are on top. Yeah, just you look at our women now, like say Keith McColgan, what's she going to do at the marathon? Lee, Georgia Bell, Elise Dorner, Hannah Nuttall, just phenomenal. Phenomenal. They really are dominating. I think we're going to be in for a treat at the Europeans of Commies. Mate, I want to move on then. So from one road race to another, I didn't actually watch Megan Keith's race. I sort of caught the back end of the Castellón 10K on Sunday morning. And yeah, good race out. Jan Skrubb, by the way, 26.43, beat Almgren, 26.45. I think Almgren he got a little greedy. I think sometimes when you do Valencia, you know, obviously it might feel amazing in the moment, but to then think you're going to knock another 10, 15 seconds off is ambitious in 4 weeks. Like, what's going to change in 4 weeks, really, over a 10K in, you know, I could understand if it wasn't perfect conditions, but it was absolutely perfect conditions. And you know, he talks about a little injury that he's been having as well. So I do fear for Almgren. I think a double threshold model is obviously high risk as well when it comes to injury. But Skrubb is, I've always been a big fan of his. He's running indoors, smashed the 3,000 a few days before, and then he's smashing a 10K. Like, phenomenal few days for him. Hey, let's talk about this Friday Night Under Lights start list, because they are, I think this is the best domestic 5K we've ever seen on British soil. These are absolutely phenomenal fields. Look, the women's race, Izzy Fry, Katie Snowden, Eloise Walker, Alex Bell, Hannah Irwin, Holly Dixon, Poppy Tank, Meg Gatsby, Lizzie Wellstead, Holly Parker. Unbelievable. Lily Saxon made a British Challenge final. The list just goes on. I mean, there's 16 women sub 16 minutes, and then there's about 20 who are sub 16:10, or 16:15. Sorry. I mean, I don't even know if you're making it into that A race if you haven't run 16:45.
What's the cutoff? How many in the?
I think there's 90 of them. It does go beyond 17 minutes. Don't get me wrong, but there's at least about 50 or 60 women there who have broken 17. Men's race: Andy Bouchard, Gebre Merriam, Charlie Wheeler, Joe Wigfield, Ted Higgins, which obviously he won't do now because we know he's going to be up in Glasgow. Adam Clark, Will Battersill, Ben Alcock, Sam Bramwell, Joe Tuffin, Cam Riley, Elliot Giles is in there. I mean, there's a load of names. I mean, there's 24 there, sub 14. And then there's a 70 odd in the race. And I think they're all sub 14, 20, 14, 30. So we have some brilliant fields on Friday night.
Yeah, we certainly do. And we know the course is quick. What's course record? Because that could be set to go.
Yeah, it will go. I think it will go. I think Wiggy might snatch it. It's 13, I believe it's 13:32.
Yeah. I bumped into Jake Smith on Friday, who obviously raced the half with Wigfield the week before. And I'm sure he won't mind me saying this, but I asked him how the race went, and first thing he said to me was, going through 10K in whatever they went through, 29, whatever, he has never felt someone next to him feel as easy going through 10K at that pace as Joe Wigfield. I didn't even say how was Joe Wigfield, like, watching Wigfield. Like, it was just that was what he decided to talk about straight away, which I think is pretty high praise.
What was Wigfield doing? Just not breathing or something?
Yeah, that's basically what he was saying. He was like, I was on an easy run next to someone. He's like, he was feeling like, okay, this is pretty fast. Wigfield could have been on his Sunday long run next to him.
Jesus. I mean, they're all going to go toe for toe in Bath in a few weeks, man.
Yeah. Was what, 2 weeks away? 3 weeks away?
2 weeks. I think it's 2 weeks Sunday.
Sunday, yeah.
2 weeks Sunday, we're going to see them go. So yeah, super interested to see how this 5K plays out. I think the course records will get slashed, to be honest. And there are pacers. I think in the women's side, pacer maybe 15-20. It's probably for Izzy Fry looking for that one. And then the men's side, I don't think there is a pacer. I don't think they can get a pacer quick enough on the men's side. Very, very difficult. Mate, let's quickly talk. Asalele gets disqualified. Gun fingers to Azzedine Habs in the World Tour. Is it petty? Or did he go too far? Is the gun fingers a little bit too much? Where do you reckon they would have drawn the line, though? Like, if he'd have just celebrated in his face, like, how would that have been taken? Is that worse? You know, just sort of getting in someone's face. But yeah, I was surprised they've DQ'd him because, Lam, as you rightly pointed out, Noah Lyles pulled this stunt in 2022.
He did. And look, we were chatting about it before we start recording. And I think you said as well, mate, that I don't know if in sprinting there's, for some reason, there's more of a allowance for this sort of thing. Like, even on the start line, the way they kind of have their own little celebration, not celebrations, but you know what I mean? Their rituals, if you like. I used to remember, and I know this isn't the best, the best athlete to use an example, but Justin Gatlin using a gun kind of ritual pre-race as well. But I don't know, mate. At what point does it get crazy? Do you remember, I can't remember who it was now. Who did the, like, slit the throat to Farah? Did the Mobot and then slit his throat in the...
Mate, yeah.
Who was it? That's killing me now.
I do remember Keely.
Was it Edris?
The, yeah, I think I was going to say he's one of those boys. Yeah, you'll have to get digging. But I remember when Bakili was in a 5K. It was just like
Paul Shalimo. Yeah.
Bakili was in a 5K and he was sort of sitting in the pack and then just did the throat slit and just went off,
yeah.
Took the dub and just kicked away from the last lap.
And, well, look, mate, Ali Douglas is on the line and he wants to talk about this. So we'll let him onto the call. Ali, how's it going, mate?
Hi there. How's it going?
Yeah, yeah, all good. We've just been chatting about the gun celebration. You wanted to give your thoughts on the matter.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't actually aware that you're not supposed to use signs like that. So it's the World Athletics have come out and said that it's sort of like a banned gesture. So that's kind of why you got you can't throw up gun signs or like sort of slit your throat kind of thing. So that's the reason why it got done. But I mean, I'm all for it. I mean, Noah Lyles in the 100 metres does it all the time.
Yep.
But I feel like he can kind of get away with it. He's got the fastest top end speed. If he goes past you with 10 metres left, you know he's won. In the 1500, you know, especially Masalela, he was on for he was going to take off a really big chunk of his national record. I think the national record was 3:39 and he ran a 3:32. So, yeah. I just don't know why he's doing that in that situation.
So one part of you is saying you're actually all for it. You enjoy these celebrations and potentially our sports should have a few more of these sort of exaggerated celebrations at the end, these heated celebrations.
Yeah. I feel like it's more of a 100 metres, 200 metres type thing though, isn't it? You don't see it happen that often.
It felt very, in a distance race, it felt very personal. I don't know if there's some beef there, but I think because they're moving a little slower and yeah, they don't have like all this, you know, sort of adrenaline build up before the race, it did feel quite personal.
Yeah. But I mean, if you look back to Cohn or Vett, I'm sure Vett celebrated one time with, he must have had 80 metres left to go and he was throwing the hands up in the air. That was definitely personal. So, but then, then again, they were probably the best rivalry, arguably the best rivalry we've had in years and years over the 1500 metres. Cole, Vett, Cram, or maybe it is good for the sport.
Yeah. I agree it is.
I think if there's certain banned things that you can't do, how much is that kind of relayed to athletes? Because let's be honest, like, athletes on a world tour aren't going through and reading the rule book around what gestures they can or can't make. And should it be a bit clearer, I guess? Because if I saw it blank and I have no idea that that's not allowed, then I'm not expecting a DQ.
Yeah, well, I wasn't aware of it really until I sort of Googled it, but it kind of says violent gestures, inappropriate, offensive gestures and gang-affiliated signs. So, yeah. I mean, you wouldn't see that at the local BMC, would you?
You might now.
Yeah.
Some athletes might be inspired. Yeah, I think it's a shame. I remember when Mackesy took his vest off and started whirling that round his head at the end of the Euros in 2014, and he won by miles. And I actually thought, okay, maybe he went a bit too far. But when you DQ someone like Masalele won the race, you know, Mackesy won the race back then. Do you really want that? You know, I know there was no medal in that world tour, but do you really want that medal when you know that actually I got beat fair and square on the day? That athlete was better than me. They'd got disqualified for a silly gesture. I think it's a bit of a shame. And actually, you look at our sport, that clip will go viral and they'll have a rivalry in the summer off the back of it. And I think that's quite a good thing. But yeah, violent, I guess, conduct shouldn't be encouraged. Yeah. But I don't know if he meant anything by it.
There's a quick one. Yeah, my coach, I was coming back from the national on the weekend and my coach and I had a discussion on this and he said he's quite good friends with Brendan Foster and he said Brendan got pipped on the line by a similar amount of time, 0.01 seconds because he eased up and didn't run through the line. He wasn't celebrating, but from that day on, Brendan then always had this signature kick where he would kick again with 20 metres left to go and he said he never ever did it again. Yeah, I guess we should just focus on winning the race and then you can do whatever you want when you're finished.
I guess that is a bit of, the difference is that they're still racing and maybe if he goes and does some sort of, gun gesture after he's crossed the line, it's seen differently and maybe he just gets a fine, right? But he's brought it into the competition before the competition's finished. And I think that was the thing with Mackesy, Matt, was that he's done it before he's finished the race. So he's done something you're not allowed to do before he's actually been through the tape. So you can't just slap him with a fine. You've got to DQ someone just like if they're stepping out of a lane.
That's the thing as well. How much money would he have lost from that DQ?
Including the record and stuff, yeah.
Crazy. It just brings me back to the Gressier one when he had the flags in the cross country. Could you remember that when he slid on the finish line and that went viral? That was probably good for his...
Yeah, it's for his image. Some of the best moments in Gressier's career have been his celebrations, right? When he's hurdled the finishing tape. And so, I would love to see more celebrations in our sport. Ali, just quickly then, you were at the National, did you say? How did you find it? What was your experience?
Well, I'm coming from an 800-meter background, so I'm not the best over cross-country, to be honest. But the course kind of suited me, to be honest. It was quite tough, hard ground. All the mud had been sort of compressed. Even on the bad bits, it was easy to get through.
Yeah,
but I mean, I looked at the final results and I couldn't believe the pace that Hugo Milne has running on that course. You know, he's averaging 4:50 per mile. He's essentially doing a 30-minute 10K on that twisty, turny, muddy. He's just a machine. And when he finishes, he doesn't even look like he's tired. He jogged over the finish line and was just like, yeah. But props to James Kingston. I think he ran out his skin. He ran amazing. I watched it back there and he just pushed him all the way, didn't he, to the last mile. So
yeah.
It was a good day. Quite good turnout for being up north, but obviously you're not going to get the numbers compared to being in Parliament Hill, but yeah, there was still a good turnout.
Interestingly, you're an 800 runner. What inspires you to run the National?
Just a bit of strength, really, turning up for the club. And with it being in the northeast as well, I kind of felt obliged to sort of do it, you know. But I wouldn't be travelling down to London to run through mud and cross country.
There you go. Brilliant. Right. Thanks for jumping on this morning, Ali. Appreciate it. Have a great day.
Yeah, no worries. Cheers, guys.
Cheers, mate. There you go.
Ali Douglas.
That's Ali's take on the celebrations. Yeah, I think he's just the Masial in this case. He's just not realised that he's not meant to do that, though, isn't he? I don't mean he's done that on purpose, and I think that's where maybe we can just use a bit of common sense. Maybe if it comes out that it is like quite personal and it was quite aggressive, then yeah, fair enough. I think then, yeah, maybe if that is the case, we need a bit more context, maybe.
Absolutely. Mate, I think that wraps up another podcast. What's going on this weekend? We've obviously got Friday Night Under Lights on Friday. I think Tokyo Marathon, look out for that on Sunday. I think there'll be some fast times. Weather supposedly looking good in Tokyo and they seem to be attracting a sort of bigger and bigger, deeper field in Tokyo every year. It's slowly becoming one of the fastest marathon majors. So keep an eye on that. And then next week, because we can get our breath back a little bit this weekend, we have a fantastic episode. We spoke to Big Dog Media, spoke to Lewis and Tom, all around content versus live sport, the impact of YouTube, how the land how the media landscape is changing in our sports. So we will be talking, we will be airing that conversation, and we want to hear from you guys. We'll have a few sort of running content creators on as well to talk about why they do it, what inspires them to start a YouTube channel. It feels like everyone has one now. The competition involved, how much money they can earn off the back of it, the power of storytelling. And also, are we losing those head-to-heads? And we talk about one of the successes of the National, it was just that pure, raw head-to-head racing between men and women. And that's what made it so special. And are we losing that a little bit with everyone chasing their own niche little goals?
Yeah, absolutely. But thanks for listening to us this week. Keep a lookout on the Instagram to find out how you can join the conversation next week. And we'll catch you guys very, very soon.